Podcast, another episode begins.
Yes, another chapter.
And it starts and it moves forward, and maybe it goes backwards and forward again, and then maybe it multiplies into multiple timelines and universes. And
yeah, kind of like two kids with the remote, and one keeps hitting fast forward, then reverse, and then right. Get back and forth.
Then you fight yourself over it because you're not sure what's really going on.
Exactly.
And that's kind of, in a nutshell, describes the movie we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
It's like...
Sorry.
Because it is one complex film. That's for sure.
That is correct. It is definitely one of those films you probably have to watch a couple times to really get it. I think I got it.
Yeah, we'll get to
ready
that
to tackle
just
it
just a bit. Yeah, but before then, I went back to work this week, and man, I hardly need another vacation. I'm pooped, as they say. And we're recording. It's Thursday night, so one more day, and then the weekend comes, and hallelujah. But not that I've got much going on this weekend, because I was going to go see a movie called The Flash, but I've already seen it. I went and saw it this afternoon, and a brief discussion about that in a bit, not too much, because we'll have something to reveal on that here in a few. But otherwise, I'm surviving, being back at work. You know, it's never fun to go back from vacation, but unfortunately, money doesn't grow on trees. So,
you know. It's hard, man. It's like you got to get yourself back used to everything and stuff.
And especially when you go back and there's multiple people on vacation, including your boss and a couple other important people. So a lot of things end up falling on you. And it's just like, so 2 or 3 days back in, you're just like, fuck this shit. I need another vacation. It's like, and, but I don't have another one till August. So a little bit of time. But I actually looked on the calendar, though. It's actually only like 10 weeks away. So it's really not that bad. It's like 8, maybe even 9 weeks. So it'll go by pretty quick.
Nice. Yeah, man, time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we're having fun at work, but you know. But anyways, how has your week been? All right.
Yeah, I've been good. You know, there were some cool movies, I guess, that got released onto Peacock and Netflix that I saw. So I was able to you know, get some flicks in, which I did. You know, usually this is, you know, my long work week, so it's hard for me to get in any watches, but I was able to watch Reinfeld. You know, it was released onto Peacock, and it looked like a fun movie. It's not as fun as it looked.
I've heard it's pretty terrible.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. The acting is like maybe Punisher Warzone type acting when the guy goes yummy, yummy in my tummy, the bad guy Jigsaw from that movie. And you're just like, what the hell is this dialogue? And that's kind of what you get from a lot of the characters in that film. Cage is obviously Cage, and he's probably, you know, as you would expect, the best part of that movie. And, you know, it was okay. It's cool that it was released at, you know, Peacock, and I didn't have to waste a theater at home or a movie ticket going to go see it. So that was fun.
Hopefully you learned your lesson with the theaters at home after these few that have come so quickly.
Yeah, like Cocaine Bear, I probably could have done without actually buying it. You know, there's like 65, I probably could have waited, you know. Rocky 3, I think Rocky 3 was cool. I mean, Creed 3 was cool seeing in theaters. You know, I guess I could have waited and, you know, I know it came out on Prime. But another movie I watched, which, yeah, I wasn't going to watch originally, but it came out on Netflix, Man Called Otto. And, Tom Hanks is like, it's one of those flicks like, in the same vein as like The Terminal or, you know, or Forrest Gump. It's a man's journey and, you know, the people around him that kind of, you know, help shape it. He's a man that he lost his wife and, you know, the way that he, you know, it's got little bits of their romance in it, and kind of how he's trying to keep his community together. And you've got people that kind of join him, and, you know, he wants to die in the film. He misses his wife and he wants to die, but he can't bring himself to do it. Which is great. But it's like, it's got some funny parts in it. Even though he's like a grumpy old man, it's like this guy falls onto the train tracks and all these people are like, oh, they're filming it. You know, he's like, the hell are you doing? You know, the guy needs help. And so his old ass has to hop down there and help this guy up and save his ass. And, you know, it's almost like an old grumpy old man living at home and, you know, these young whippersnappers, you know, kind of thing. But I think he grows to appreciate his younger neighbors. He teaches one how to drive, and, you know, he compliments her in such a weird way in this one scene. He's like, you know, she feels like she can't learn how to drive stick. And he's like, you came to this country with nothing. You raised two kids. You're holding your house together. This, you've done harder things than this. He's like, yeah. And, you know, but he kind of says it in an insulting way, but it's like a compliment. So I think that's kind of funny how he's able to do that. So pretty cool flick. And, also went ahead and rented, Fast 8. And I know you're not a fan of the Fast and the Future flicks. I've had some in the future. Fast and the Furious flicks. We ended up renting Fast 8 because I had seen Fast 7. And to me, Fast 7 was where the series should have ended. So that's where I stopped watching, because I'm like, how do you continue without Brian? And then, you know, Fast X comes out.
You rented it?
I rented it.
You know, most of those are on Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus, I thought they were on Peacock.
Oh no, well maybe. I thought they were on Paramount Plus. Maybe they switched. Because, like, they were on Paramount Plus.
This past weekend, I think they were all on Peacock, and then I was like, oh, I'll watch it Monday.
Maybe they
switched. And then it just disappeared.
Maybe they switched at the beginning of June or something. Who knows?
Maybe so. They were on and then they disappeared, and I didn't know if they were, I guess I should have looked on Paramount Plus, but I rented it for about, you know, $3.99 or whatever. And it was entertaining. It's the one with Charlize Theron and Dom, you know, turns against his team. You know, I guess it's because he had a baby with that Latina chick that he was, you know, shacked up with in Fast 6? It was Fast 6 whenever they
blur together.
Yeah, man, it's all one blur. I'd have to go back and watch Fast 6 and 7 to see, you know, which one is what. But I guess next is to watch Fast 9. I'll see if it's on Paramount Plus, and then maybe we'll see Fast X. We'll see. But did that, watched a couple more episodes of Babylon 5. Still need to keep on going. I'm still not done with season one. I'm working my way through it. But that was my week.
I didn't watch as much as that even, but I did see Creed 3 finally, since it's on Prime. And now I'm not quite as harsh on it as you were. I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was about, acting wise and story wise, about like 2. You know, it was a serviceable sequel, but not great. I think my biggest problems with it is I totally get the story of Adonis being on his own and moving on his own without Rocky. But this wasn't that story, because in this version of the story, there's no reason for Adonis to come out of retirement at all to fight his former childhood friend other than Pride.
Yeah.
And he doesn't need to prove himself on Pride. He's got plenty of money, a beautiful daughter, a beautiful wife. You know, there's no sense his, you know, this is a little bit of spoiler here, but, you know, his mother passes away in the movie. His mother saw his last fight. There's no reason for him to get back in the ring. Rocky mm-hmm. would have even told him, you don't need to fight for Pride, boy. You know, there's no reason for that. You know, Rocky would have said, that's a stupid reason to fight.
Yeah.
And so that's my thing. Like, you know, you want to move Adonis on from the shadow of Rocky and tell his own story. Well, do it in a better way than that. But you should have made the story of, you should have started the story before he retired and made it about him retiring.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is one last fight. I have to fight this guy. You know, you could have done a Clubber Lang type thing where he loses the belt early in the movie. Then he has a rematch. Yeah, maybe people would have compared it to Rocky III, but that's okay. It would have made more sense.
Exactly. You know, especially with no Rocky in it.
Right. There's just no reason for Adonis to fight in this movie. But other than that, you know, it was fine. I know people said that. I was trying to figure out what people kept saying the movie looked like an anime. I didn't really
get that. So the scene where it's just them in the ring.
Well, yeah, that's the only scene. I didn't really like that scene. I thought that was weird.
The way Michael B. Jordan explained it in his interview, he said when an anime happens and two fighters are fighting in an anime, it's like everything else disappears around them and it's just them.
But there's usually like cool background lines.
Usually. But it's like in this one, it's just
it takes you out of the film.
And the, yeah, it does.
You lose the crowd noise and the excitement, and it was weird. Yeah.
I get that's what he was trying to do, but yeah, it definitely didn't look like a Rocky or a Creed film at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. You know, Rocky would have said, yeah, hey, you don't owe this guy anything.
Right.
Yeah.
And, and the fact that I don't completely agree with Sylvester Stallone's comments that the movie was too dark. I didn't really feel it was that dark or anything. But I did feel that I can see where Sylvester says not the direction he would have taken it. And, you know, there's not even a mention of Rocky. You know, he could have said, like, oh, Rock, you know, or something. So it's a little weird. It's like you're trying to tie it to the Rocky Creed franchise, but then it doesn't really tie in. Like, if you were to show that film to someone, they might not even know it was part of the Rocky franchise, unless they're really adverse into Apollo Creed and what happened with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not a terrible film or anything. A pretty good directorial debut for Michael B. Jordan, I'd say. You know, I give him props on that.
Yeah, yeah.
And at least Coogler was involved with it with some of the story ideas and stuff. So there was some involvement there. But it had like three different story credits on there. So I don't know how much Coogler was involved. But, you know, I don't know. It was all right. Other than that, man, I did see The Flash today. And not going to say a lot because we're going to bust our bubble early, but we're going to do it as a full episode next week and talk to Flash. And all I'll say is James Gunn, Tom Cruise, and these people that saw the film put the hype level at about a 12. I don't think I'd go that high. I'd bring it down a little bit, like an 8 or 9, but it's still really good. Definitely top 3 movie of the year for me so far. If you want to compare, I would put my top 3 right now would be Across the Spider-Verse, John Wick 4, and then The Flash. So there's some comparison there, if it gives you an idea where to stand. But The Flash is still really, really good and probably pretty easily the best film in the DCEU. So that's still pretty high props for it. But I just wouldn't quite – I had this pedestal from all these people saying how great it was, and I don't think it quite reached that, but it's still really good. And I know you're going to see it, and then we'll discuss it next week more in full. So I don't want to say too much today.
Yeah, yeah. Man. I'll definitely definitely see it by Monday. That's for sure.
Yeah, I would.
If I don't see it before Monday, it'll definitely be Monday.
I would just watch the internet because the spoilers are going to happen. And there's some pretty bonkers stuff in that last hour of the film that are quite pleasant surprises, I'll say.
Nice.
I don't want to say too much. I'll wait till next week. The CGI is a little rough in parts. People are right about that, but not so rough that it really, it wasn't any rougher than the CGI in Suicide Squad or anything else. You know, I think it's just the way DC films have always kind of looked. They've always had kind of a rougher edge sometimes to the CGI.
The director said that it looks the way it looks because he wants you to see it from Flash's perspective. I saw that too. Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, I guess, you know, but there's some other things. But, you know, it's cool. We'll talk about it when we do it next week, and we'll talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah.
But, that's really all I watched this week, just so Creed 3. I went and saw The Flash. I did kind of watch parts of Way of Water now that's back on Now it's out there for streaming, but I didn't watch all of it. Kids had it on in the background. I watched some of it. Anyway, so let's do a little bit of news, and then we'll get to the feature film. And coming up later in the show, we do have a This Month in Pop Culture History, as we do once a month on the show. We got a trailer this week for the new Star Wars game called Star Wars Outlaws, which is coming to all the next-gen systems. And this is the one that's been in the works for a few years now from Ubisoft. It's supposedly an open-world Star Wars game. And, you know, okay. Ubisoft doesn't have a real great reputation, so people are kind of wondering how this game will be. The trailer looked cool. Mm-hmm. The problem with the trailer was it was no gameplay. It was all cinematic trailer footage, you know. So, I mean, you could say it looks cool, but it's easy to put a cinematic trailer together, you know?
Exactly.
I guess we'll see when it happens, if it's good. But I don't have a next-gen system, so it's hard for me to have a cat in the bag on that one. You know? And did you know that... Huh? Go ahead.
Like Xbox XS or PS5?
Yeah.
Yeah. We have an XS, but it's in the kids' room. It was Jake's birthday present, so it's like, you know, I don't really mess with it. I've been playing Destiny and Battlefront, but I guess I'll wait for reviews before I make an investment on that.
Did you know that there was going to be a F-bomb in Star Wars in Andor?
What?
Yeah, it was going to be the first ever F-bomb in Star Wars, and it was at the you saw of Andor, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, towards the final episode when Marva is giving her speech to fight back against the Empire. Instead of saying fight the Empire, apparently she was going to say fuck the Empire. But there was no word whether it was nixed at Lucasfilm or what, but they just decided against it at the last minute. And I have a feeling this was probably nixed at Lucasfilm because, like, you know, it's not necessary in Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know,
it's new direction.
It would be a little out of place, I would think.
It kind of scares me, these new directors that they have. Like the director of the former Weinstein assistant that's directing The Acolyte, she went on an interview and she was talking about how George Lucas isn't the be-all, end-all for Star Wars. And while that may be true, the way she said it, it almost sounds like she doesn't respect Lucas or, you know, we should forget about it. Let the past die. Kill it if you have to. In that kind of vein. And I was like, this should be like revered, you know, Lucas should be more revered. I was like, why is she talking about Lucas this way? And I'm like, no, this kind of makes me feel, you know, kind of skeptical about these new Star Wars films. I hope they're good. I'm sure I'll enjoy them, but you know, it makes me worried this whole talk about how, you know, hey, you know, Lucas, he's done, man. It's not, you know, forget about it. It's like, man, you should always remember Lucas. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how this new Star Wars stuff pans out, you know,
with the
F-bombs and
the you know. And Disney being the company that they are, you know, they have their division of Fox and the R-rated stuff. But, like, I know Disney kind of lets Lucasfilm run as its own entity. But between the powers that be at Disney and even Kathleen Kennedy herself, I just don't see Kathleen Kennedy saying, oh, yeah, let's drop an F-bomb in Star Wars. Because
She's
worked with George for years. She respects him. You know,
yeah.
So it just seems like it would be an odd choice for her to make as the overall president of the company, you know? So kind of weird. A couple more series that we're looking forward to are being delayed due to the writer's strike. And that is Daredevil Born Again and The Penguin. They're taking a step aside for solidarity during this ongoing writer strike. So, you know, we might have to wait a little bit longer for the return of Daredevil and to see the Matt Reeves' Penguin series that ties in with his Batman film. So, I don't quite understand what that's all about. I'm sure it has to do with money and dues and unions and all that stuff, but
probably
hopefully they solved that.
Like, we don't even get dental, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Speaking of Babylon 5, the trailer hit for the animated film Long Road Home today. And it hits August 15th on Blu-ray and 4K and digital formats and things like that. And it looks really cool, man. I watched the trailer a couple times and it looks like it's going to fit well into the Babylon 5 universe. And looks like they went for a realistic look to the animation. So it's not overly cartoony and good. Looks like good voice acting. It's cool to hear some of the original actors that are still alive. All the original actors still alive came back to voice their characters, and even nice. the replacement voices that you hear in the trailer sounded really good. Check that out if you haven't seen that trailer yet for Babylon 5 on the road home. Definitely looking forward to that. Kevin Smith has claimed that he has seen the famed Batman Forever Schumacher cut. But somehow he got a copy of it. Now, it's not the completed version. You know, it doesn't have all the finished effects and finished edits and stuff, but it's the raw mm-hmm. cut that has apparently been bootleg for years, but in recent years it's a little harder to find the bootleg. And apparently he has it, and this has got the internet stirring. That is Warner Brothers sending out copies, because Kevin would not reveal where he got it from. He just says he got a copy of it. And he even made a comment, oh, Warner Brothers is going to cancel my ticket to the Flash premiere, making people think that he got this from Warner Brothers. So it makes you wonder if there's some work behind the scenes going with this, that maybe Warner Brothers is testing the waters by showing it to some people and saying, is there a audience that wants this? You know, and obviously there is. And he reveals some things, like it's had a 15-minute longer opening. Like Two-Face robbing the bank, you don't see for almost 15 to 20 minutes into the film. Definitely some darker nightmare stuff. And he made some comments about it. And he wants his Fat Man Beyond partner, Mark Bernierden, to watch it with him. And they're apparently going to talk about it on their podcast coming up this week.
Wow.
So maybe more to come. I hope this is true. I think in today's day and age, these kind of films are sitting there in the vault. If you're a studio and you have a reason to make money, why not release these cuts that are out there? I mean, I think Schumacher himself would want it seen. You know, he's already passed on, but I think he would want people to see it.
And I think so, too.
It'd be pretty cool if we get to see the Batman Forever Schumacher cut one day. So we'll see if that happens. Lastly, man, a little bit of sad news this week. We lost the great John Romita Sr. For you people that don't know, he's one of the greatest comic artists of all time. I mean, he helped co-create Wolverine, The Punisher, Mary Jane Watson. I mean, you think about those three right there. You know, we would not have one of the most famous female characters in all the comic books, in Mary Jane Watson, one of the most famous mutants of all time with Wolverine, and one of the most famous vigilantes of all time with The Punisher. And that's just the tip of the iceberg of what this man has done. He's illustrated everyone under the Marvel banner, you name it, helped bring Marvel into the mainstream in the 70s and 80s when they were kind of taking a hit, you know, in the 70s and not doing as well. And Romita Sr. came in and helped create a lot of new characters and bring them into the modern age. Mm-hmm. And this guy, his son, of course, is a great artist too. I mean, he was 93 years old, and he's left an amazing legacy of work that's going to be remembered forever. And if there's a Mount Rushmore comic book artist, I mean, he's right up there along with Steve Ditko, Jack Kirby, George Perez.
Definitely.
John Romita Sr. I mean, he's just one of those guys that you're going to put up there in that pedestal of the 5 to 8 greatest comic book artists of all time.
It's sad whenever you see a prolific icon pass like that, and someone that was responsible for a lot of our childhood mm-hmm. and a lot of, you know, people's childhoods now.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, and kids today, you know, might read books, or whether it's digitally on their pads or read their trades that their parents buy them, and they might not take the time to look at those artists and know it, but they but it's still getting ingrained in them that they're reading a story with one of the greatest artists of all time. And that's important, you know, just the storytelling factor and putting in those mm-hmm. kids' heads these amazing tales that we've read over the years. And he's one of the legends, man. And 93, though, what a long life and long legacy. And he'll be remembered forever for it. And that says a lot, you know. So.
Definitely, man.
Rest in peace to John Romita Sr.
Yeah.
That's all the news I've got, which is okay, because let's get into this featured film that we chose to do. Christopher Nolan's got a new film coming out in about a month called Oppenheimer, which is about the making of the atomic bomb. And it definitely looks interesting and good, as most Nolan films do, but it also doesn't look like usually when you go to see a Christopher Nolan film, you know you're going to go on some sort of maybe a mystery, maybe a journey, maybe a crazy science fiction black hole story or something. You know, you're always in for going through dreams and Inception, or visiting the world of Gotham City in his Dark Knight trilogy. I mean, you just know Christopher Nolan has become one of those directors that you expect relative greatness from him. So he released a movie during the COVID pandemic that got delayed a few times, and stars John David Washington, which is Denzel Washington's son. Mm-hmm. And the trailers came out. The trailers, in typical Nolan fashion, didn't tell you a lot about what the movie was about. It was enough to get you intrigued. And of course, that movie is Tenet from a couple years ago. This was released. And, you know, this is a movie that passed a lot of people by because they weren't going to the theaters yet. I mean, it did okay at the box office, but not as good as it could have done.
And about as good as 2020 would let you do.
Right. You know? And, you know, it came to HBO Max and people have seen it since. And I actually bought this without even seeing it because I was like, you know, it's Christopher Nolan. I think I'll like it. I'm going to give my first reaction to this movie, and then I'm going to let – it's kind of hard to summarize this movie. But I'm going to let you attempt it in a minute since it was your first watch. But my first reaction to this film was like, that's really interesting. I'm not quite sure what I just watched or if I got it all, but I really liked it.
Yeah.
Then the second time I watched it, I picked up one more. I liked it more. I started to understand it more, and I still didn't quite get it all. So this week was the third time I watched it, and I still feel about like I did after the second time. I still really like it a lot, and I think it's a remarkably complex, very cool idea. But I had to read the wiki for this podcast to completely kind of make sure I got everything.
Yeah.
And even then, I'm still not sure if I got all that in the film because this film – And I don't want to scare people away from watching this because you should watch this because there's a lot of brilliance in this movie.
It makes you think.
But there's also a lot going on in this movie, like a lot.
Yes.
And at times you're like, okay, am I getting all this? So with that said, how would you summarize this film, Matt?
The way I would summarize this film. Yeah. And I'll use this through the protagonist's timeline, as he is called. So opening up, we get a view of a heist that is happening in Kyiv, and we see the protagonist saved by a man who runs away with a red string with a little washer on it on his backpack, saves him by shooting the man with an inverted bullet, which he doesn't know is an inverted bullet at the time. He's like, whoa. And you as the audience are like, what the hell just happened? How'd that man get shot? Until he is, you know, tortured almost to death, wakes up in a coma and recruited as a tenant before he heads off to Mumbai and meets what you would see, you know, as a rookie. But he's not really a rookie, played by Robert Pattinson. His name is Neil, which is likely an inverted last four letters of his last name. We'll get to that later.
Pause for you just for a minute. And I just want to say real quick, people that are still on the fence about Pattinson, whether it's Batman or anything else, this is another one of those
films. This is good. Yeah.
He's really good in it.
He is, man. I was fucking surprised. I'm like, you know, this is, he's good, man. He's, yeah. You know, but I'll continue. Essentially he is put on a mission to take on Salve, the Russian the Russian drug lord or Russian arms dealer, because he has some kind of clue to these inverted items, bullets, artifacts, and inverted people coming through the timeline. He learns this after he goes to Oslo and hijacks a painting so that he can get to this man through his wife, Kat. And because this guy went crazy, his wife is kind of estranged. He was digging up plutonium or uranium in a secret Russian town of Spaz 12, where he uncovered an artifact with instructions on how to collect these other artifacts to create this inverted device, basically like an Oppenheimer, which is alluded to in the film. These people from the future sent these instructions to him and are communicating to him so he can set off this device, blow up time inverted so they can avert a climate crisis. So this is all over climate change. These damn climate activists trying to blow up the fucking world. Damn you and your hats. I don't know. But anyways, that's basically the dilemma of the movie. But You know, he goes into Talyn to try and he offers to steal this device, one of the artifacts for the Russian oligarch, you know, arms dealer dude, when he uses a temporal pincer movement going through time to find out what happened, how he took the device so he could go back and intercept it. And this is where you really get into the mixed up timeline. Mm-hmm. So then we get to the Talyn turnstile with the protagonist, because he's got to go back in time, save Kat, because she got shot with an inverted bullet and all of this. They go back to Oslo, where they run into themselves, and they ran into their inverted selves but didn't know. Robert Pattinson knew, and he realized that something was going on, because he, you know, revealed that one of the guys was the protagonist, lets him go. You find out that's like the loop. You close that loop, so you know right. what happened there. Then they invert themselves again. They inverted themselves to heal Kat in the process of that. They keep moving backwards through time to the boat, to the battle that happened, so they can see the battle happen that, you know, ended up where they ended up setting a bomb off and collapsing this device underground for the future people to find. That's all put together and stuff, because they ended up getting all the pieces. When protagonist is saved by a man with the same keychain on his backpack, takes a shot from a bullet for him so that he can still stop the doomsday device that they're trying to bury for the future people, all put together so they can set it off 200 years in the future, invert all the time, destroying the past to save the future. And then at the end, after they escape the tunnel and they pull off this, you know, supplotting the future evil people from the future that want this to happen. Pattinson appears and he notices that he has the keychain on him, reveals that he's known him the whole time and that he recruits him. And, you know, that this will be the last time they see each other, because after that, I think he inverts himself. That's where he inverts himself to take the bullet for the protagonist so he can stop the device from being sealed off like an Egyptian tomb. And, you know, he's also the guy that went back in time to save him in Kiev, which brings us to another timeline, which is even more complex. So it's like you've got to put Neil's timeline together. You've got to put Kat's timeline together. Neil's is probably the most complex. He moves forward in time. From London, all the way up to backwards through time to Kiev, moves forwards in time to Mumbai and Oslo, to the turnstile, and then has to go backwards through time, then forwards through time, then back, then forward again. So it's crazy. And then Kat, you know, she has to move backwards and forwards through time with them so that she can kill her husband before he can set off the device. 'Cause I guess he's supposed to die, and the device gets sealed off with his death. But she kills him prematurely, jumping into the water, which hints to another thing where she saw herself jump into the water, or saw somebody jump into the water, but didn't know it was herself. Right. And so you get this another loop that closes. That's probably the best way I can really do it.
No, you did pretty good. I mean,
yeah.
So your initial reaction, what do you think about the film?
It is so fucking complex, but it is very good. And that Casablanca reference at the end, you know, where he's like, you know, we've been, you know, this is the last time we'll see each other, kind of thing. And they just walk off into the sunset with each other's pieces of the puzzle, so that, you know, no one can find them again. And, you know, bring about this Oppenheimer inverted time mess. What's also cool is that the protagonist loops things up, you know, wraps things up by going back and killing Priya, because even though she said she wasn't going to harm Kat and her son, she tries to, and he ends up, you know, saving Kat and her son, who ends up becoming Robert Pattinson's character. the man that, you know, protagonist recruits and ends up going back in time, a la Kyle Reese, and saves him. And I think it's just, it's a complicated masterpiece, right. Really.
Well, no, even Nolan himself says it's the most complicated thing he ever wrote.
Yes.
And he thinks that people will study the film for a long time. Yeah, I kind of knew you would like this, and because you tend to, as much as you like silly horror movies, things like that, you do appreciate a complex piece of art. And I think this film is extremely complex as well. And I also think it's really well acted and really cool as hell ideas.
Yes,
there are some parts like you really have to watch what's going on. Like when they're in the airport the second time and they're mm-hmm. fighting themselves and there's people going backwards. It's really, you like really have to kind of follow what's going on. Not just the main characters, but everything that's going around them.
Yeah.
Cause he's in, and it's a little like, it's a little daunting. Like, wait, what is this? And then when they get to the main battle and people are running backwards and all that, it's like and I think the movie is meant to kind of confuse the viewer on purpose.
Yes.
Because they want you to be caught up in what's going on. What timeline are you in?
You got to look at the colors, the mm-hmm. red and the blue. Blue is moving backwards. Red is moving forward.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that imagery going on.
And then we didn't even talk about the fact that halfway through the movie, when they first come to the inverted device and we're introduced to Ives and this whole team that is protecting the tenants.
Cavalry.
Yeah. They protect the tenants and the protagonists. Their whole job is like, they know this exists and they've been looking for the device this whole time. And basically the protagonist leads them right to the device. Mm-hmm. So he was being watched. And also, this is kind of a throwaway line in the film, but is Sator, is he a tenant? Because he says, we live in a twilight world. He uses the line.
That's right.
And that's been a rumor. Like, Sator was aware of the tenants. Like, was he a rogue tenant? You know, but they never say that.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Because he does use a line they use to recruit people or to bring them, or they use to know who each other are.
Well, we know there's a leak somewhere.
Right.
We just don't know who the leak is. So it must have been like could have been another tenant. That part is kind of unanswered.
Hmm. Some interesting things about this film is Kenneth Branagh worked almost a year to get his Russian accent right. He wanted to sound as authentic as he could. About 90% of the inverted effects are all practical, which Nolan is well known for doing that. They filmed the car chase backwards. Well, there's two inverted car chases in the scene, basically, because the original one, then when they go back in time to go through the car chase again.
Yes.
And it's all filmed with practical effects and stunt drivers and wire work and things like that. All the walking backwards, all the actors trained to run and walk backwards. And so it was all, it wasn't shot using cameras. You'd think that would be easy.
Yeah.
Now I imagine there is some special effects. I would imagine in the big battle scene when there's hundreds of actors, some of that had to have been shot with backwards cameras.
Yeah.
I just don't think you could film that with 100 people.
Like the explosions, you know?
Oh, yeah. And the explosions had to be, shot the original way, then formed backwards. Obviously, the inverted bullets and things like that are all special effects. But Nolan did say 90% of the film is practical effects. And that's pretty remarkable considering the amount of effect work that's done in this film. And it looks amazing.
Yeah.
John David Washington's an interesting choice for protagonist, being that he hasn't had a huge career to this point, but he's good. You definitely see signs of his dad in there, and his mannerisms and things like that. I think it's interesting. He's never named in the film. He's just the protagonist.
And apparently
he's not, they allude that he's not the only one, that there are other people out there that are protagonists. He just happens to be the guy who's made it the furthest. They kind of allude to that a lot of them don't make it as far as he did. Does that mean they died or who knows?
That's a good question.
This film is, I think it, I mean, I don't know where it stands for me as far as rankings with Nolan, but I think it's a movie that I will watch. I may watch once a year for a while and just continue to study it and pick up on it.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, there are things in this that are just, you're going to see every time you watch it.
There's a lot of time travel movies in there, out there in the movie sphere, This is one of those films where it's a It Always Happened time loop. It's not like Terminator. It's not like Time Cop. It's if I had to put it as a, it's not even like Back to the Future. It's very different, you know, because
way more.
It loops, but not like Looper. It just kind of always happened. They run into the different past versions of themselves without even knowing it.
Right.
So it's cool how it just kind of, you know, all happened at once.
And Looper's not a time travel movie in the same sense. Looper uses time travel as a plot device.
Yes.
There's no cause and effect of time travel in that movie or nothing. It's just simply to drive the plot. Where this also is complex enough where it ignores the typical time travel rules of movies because it doesn't want to bog you down in that. Like you said, it makes it sound like time is relative in that it loops around. And there's been people that think that the movie, there's been theories that when it ends, it's just going to start again. That they're caught in a time loop, the protagonism, and that it's all going to happen again. Because like you said, it's already happened or it will happen. Which is an interesting theory. Because I also think sometimes with Christopher Nolan films, people are trying to make them more complex than they really are. Like the spin top at the end of Inception, you know, did Leo get out or not? You know,
open.
So, yeah. But it's left open to interpretation. I think the same thing with the Inattentant. Is the protagonist going to go back in a loop along with Neil, or did it really end? You know, and Neil goes off with Ives and goes back to the Tin organization, and the protagonist goes back to the CIA. You know, it's hard to say. So,
and they also say that the protagonist, like, this was his plan from the future.
Right.
So it's like, you know, it's, I think what's happened has happened, and, you know, it's the end. So the end happens. The beginning hasn't happened yet, which I think they mention that in the film as well. So I think that's cool too, because what you're watching is the end. You're not even watching the beginning.
Right.
You know, so it's, there's a whole beginning to this story that's probably pretty cool. And you could even do another movie about it, but, this is the end. And that's pretty neat.
And that's, you make a really good point right there. Out of all of Nolan's films that aren't the Batman movies, you know, I didn't feel I never needed a sequel to Inception or Memento or anything, but like Tenet's one movie, like I think a sequel would be really cool, you know, to see what else they could do with this inverted time travel plot device.
Definitely.
And bring the protagonist back and he gets caught up in it all again. And I don't know if Nolan ever will. I mean, you know, Tenet wasn't a huge box office success, but some of that was due to timing. But I think it's a movie that, from what I've read, most people watch it and maybe they don't quite understand, but I haven't read anybody that, like, dislike this film. You know, there are people who say it's a little too complex. They don't quite understand it, but I haven't really read anything negative about the movie. It's also got a remarkable musical score. You know, people complain about the sound mix in the theaters. It's definitely much easier to watch. I don't really have any problems at home. Sometimes when they have the gas mask on, but I think it's done on purpose. They want you to be as confused as the characters are. I think Nolan did that on purpose. When they have the mask on, you can't hear them as well. But I think it's by design. You know?
Well, don't they have to breathe backwards?
Right.
Since they're going through time backwards. So it's like, they got to have that going on.
Yeah. Or even,
serves a purpose.
Sator even talks in Russian backwards.
You know,
in one point in the film. There's a couple other actors that do backwards talking it, but not too much, but a little bit in the film. You know, but yeah, I mean, this is a movie that you could talk about and break down for a long time and continue to study. And I think it's a really cool film. And if you've been on the fence about it, I think people should watch Tenet and just be prepared to sit down and really focus, give yourself 2 hours to really pay attention to what's going on in this movie. And it's a really, really cool movie with some incredible ideas and good performances and really cool practical special effects. And one of the better original science fiction movies come out in the last few years.
For sure.
Definitely a science fiction movie, even though it's real world clothing and real world weapons and stuff. It's a sci-fi movie. You know, sci-fi doesn't always mean spaceships and aliens, you know.
No. It also means, you know, scientifically advanced equipment, like the Doomsday device that's, you know, in this film.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, I thought was, it was cool. And that's something I didn't even really pick up on, I think, until the second time I watched it, was the algorithm was these multiple devices that were sent from the future. I didn't quite get that the first time.
Yeah. It was, they're originally hidden in these nuclear, like spots, hoping that no one would actually dig them up.
Right.
But people did. They dug them up.
That's crazy. But Tenet, man, how'd you watch it? It is back on HBO Max, isn't it? Yeah.
I didn't think it was on HBO Max. Oh, I searched for it on Google, and Google told me that I had to rent it every single thing, and it didn't even show up on HBO Max. But I didn't look to verify, so maybe that was, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't show it on Max right now.
Yeah. So I rented it for $3.99. For a few more dollars, I could have bought it, but I didn't know how good the film was, so I didn't buy it. I could have got it for $7.99, which is probably pretty damn good, for Tenet, especially for Ultra HD 4K streaming. That ain't bad. Might be the next movie I own. Yeah,
you'll have to buy it down the road and watch it and watch it and watch it. all right, before we preview next week's film, let's set time of the month, middle of the month. We usually do this month in pop culture history, and let's do it, man.
Yeah, dude. Of course, as always, Long, our former co-host, who's kind of on sabbatical right now. He mentioned Grease earlier in the week. So this for him. He's in 1978. This month, the film Grease opens, starring John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John, based on the 1971 musical. I didn't realize the musical came first and then the movie came afterwards. I thought the movie inspired the musical, but it's actually backwards.
Yeah, I mean, Grease is okay. You know, I mean, I've got other musicals I'd rather watch than it. I mean, I've seen it. It's all right.
It's iconic.
Yeah, it's iconic, product of its time. You know, it doesn't maybe hold up as well as some other modern musicals and stuff, I would guess, you know.
But, yeah.
Definitely iconic. People know the songs from it. Made Travolta a big star. You know, I mean, he was already kind of, I don't know, did Saturday Night Fever come out yet? I can't remember. I think Grease is kind of what got him started. Then Saturday Night Fever came out shortly after.
Yeah.
It sounds about right. I think Grease was like 76 and Saturday Night Fever was like 78, 79.
Yeah, Grease was 78. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Moving forward, DC, some DC style news. This month in 1959, we lost the great George Reeves, who first portrayed Superman on TV. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we lost our first Superman ever this month.
Was he the first, or was there a movie serial Superman first?
Ooh, well, yeah, I guess you could argue the movie serial.
Yeah. But George Reeves was probably the most first well-known one, appearing on TV and a couple of short movies, I guess, he appeared in.
Yeah.
Or at least one of them, I remember. And, but yeah, man, George Reeves, his legacy, wasn't his legacy a little tarnished late in his life with some alcohol issues, things like that?
He beat his wife or something like that.
Things like that. But, you know, he was the first man to, you know, and he portrayed Clark Kent and Superman as kind of just every man. He wasn't muscly or beef. He was just kind of a regular looking dude on the suit.
Not even like Reeves. Reeves was actually a little built, but Christopher Reeve was tall, you know? Yeah, George Reeves is kind of like an everyday looking guy. Couldn't really differentiate,
right?
Superman with him.
Reeves was buff. You ever seen pictures of him out of the suit? He was buff.
Yeah. I saw an old little audition where he was getting into the suit, and I was like, man, you know, he's more musclier than that suit lets on. He's actually, looks like he's in pretty good shape. Probably could have knocked that, you know, dipshit at the bar in Superman 2 across the room by himself without the Kryptonian powers, man. Next, more DC stuff, because why not? With the events of today, the release of The Flash, This month in 1989 and 1982, Batman and Batman Returns were released this month. 82, man.
You meant 92.
Not, sorry, 92. Yeah, yeah. I got the 80s and the 90s mixed up. 89 and 92.
I remember standing in line to see Batman with my dad, and it was cool. It was a movie that changed my life, man, as along with Star Wars. I've talked about it before in the podcast. You know, yeah. 89 got me into change things, and it made me the fan I am of Batman today. And Batman 89 is not actually my favorite Batman film, but I will always appreciate it for what it is. And I'm glad we got it. And then this week we got to see Michael Keaton return in The Flash, which we'll talk about more soon.
Oh, definitely, man. Definitely. Getting away from DC. In 1972, this month, legendary video game and home computer Atari Inc., founded by Nolan Bushnell and Ted Dabney in Sunnyvale, California. Of course, Atari would be that first home video game console.
Yep, I'm still mad about the punk that broke into the side door of my parents' garage and took my Atari.
Son of a bitch. I think he was out for rotten in hell.
I can't remember why it was in the garage. I think we were doing some stuff in the house. We had moved some things out there. And some bastard stole my Atari, man.
I hope he fell on it and that joystick went up his ass. Yes. I hope for your sake.
But you know, Asteroids and all those great games, Pac-Man, all that stuff.
Pong, yeah.
Yes. Pitfall was a great one.
Oh, Pitfall, yeah. Man, Asteroids. Loved Asteroids. Going back to DC, 1940, Batman Comics, mobsters rubbed out a circus high wire team known as the Flying Graysons, leaving their son, Dick, Robin, an orphan.
Yeah.
That happened in 1940, man.
Man, I didn't realize Robin was that old of a character. I thought he was maybe like 50s or 60s. I know a lot of the DC characters are older than Marvel. But Robin's arguably, he's arguably the most famous sidekick ever created. Would you think? I mean, I can't think of one more famous than Batman and Robin.
Yeah, I think Batman and Robin's definitely the most iconic pair for sure, man. In 1342, this month, June 22nd, actually, June 22nd, 1342, is when Bilbo Baggins returns home in The Hobbit. I didn't realize that. I thought that was kind of cool. 1342. I was like, I didn't realize these things were like actually dated. And I found that out. I was like, I just thought it was like Middle Earth time, you know?
Hobbit nerd.
Yeah. Tolkien nerd. And then lastly, we'll do a trifecta here. Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, Age of Extinction, and Dark of the Moon were all released this month. Of course, Revenge of the Fallen in 2009, Dark of the Moon, I think, was 2011, and then Extinction was like 13, 14.
Yeah, most Transformers. I did, after we talked about Bumblebee last week, I started Dark of the Moon, because I was like, you want to go back and watch this. And I didn't finish it, though, because I was tired. But, man, like, the first 30 minutes are really rushed. I realize that now.
Yes.
Like, this is everything. It's like they just, let's get past all the plot shit so we can get to action.
You know why this happened? So in the first Transformers, they had all these writers and everything. Then in 2009, there was a writer strike. And so Michael Bay took on the writing for Revenge of the Fallen, and he never relinquished those writing powers. So he wrote Dark of the Moon as well. And that's why, that MacGuffin with Revenge of the Fallen is like kind of, the plot is lost in translation. Yeah. Right. Same thing. They're trying to rush and get to the action there. And then same thing with Dark of the Moon. And you can see it. Bay is being Bay. He's like, well, let's get to my explosions and my crazy robot fights. And that's why that happens, man. Oh, that's why it was what it was. I don't know why I did a Sean Connery voice.
I have no idea either.
Yeah. Yes. My ash. I don't know.
I have no idea. You just lost the whole show there.
Tangent.
Yeah, I'd say.
Yeah. It was supposed to be about Tenet, but it's a tangent. Yeah. Not quite a Tenet.
Is that it for
that? That is it. That is it. We're ending on Transformers.
Cool. Good stuff, man. You always do a good job with that.
Thank you, sir.
That's why I keep you around as my co-host. All right. Well, before we get out of here, next week, we have every now and then we branch off instead of doing a retro film. We do something that's currently in theaters. I think the last time we did this was The Batman last year. That sounds right.
Yeah.
So not by on purpose that we're doing another DC film for our, but we are going to talk The Flash next week.
Tell me something. You can go anywhere. Another timeline. Another universe. So why do you want to stay and fight to save this one? Because this is the world where my mom lives. I'm not going to lose her again.
Time has a pattern that it can't help reliving. Different people, different worlds, drawn to each other like magnets.
My face. So my face.
If you were to go into the past, you have no idea what the consequences can be.
Bruce, I could fix things.
You could also destroy everything.
This can't be happening. I completely broke the universe.
Zod, we've been waiting for you.
I created a world with no metahumans. And now there's no one to defend us.
Want some help?
You are?
Yeah. I'm Batman.
If I can't undo what I did, if I can't get back, there might not be a future. What's the play? Batman, what do?
We try not to die.
It's not Clark.
My name is Kara.
I'm
Barry. We're Barry.
Barry, what are you doing?
Our kids are going to want to see this. Currently in theaters this weekend, and we want to give people a week to see it, you know, because we are going to go full spoiler when we talk it. There's no doubt about that. I saw it today, loved it. Looking, you know, I think Matt, I think you're going to enjoy it too. And one thing I will say that as not a spoiler-free preview. I know people have their feelings about Ezra Miller and the things that they have gone through in their life with their mental illness and dealing with some of their troubles of the law. But Ezra absolutely owns this film. And I will give him that credit. He's really good.
That's what I heard from a lot of people, that they're like, you know, he's very talented in this film.
Very good. So go see The Flash, enjoy it, and then come back next week and listen to us discuss the film on the show next week for the next episode of the podcast. And but until then, the rebelradiopodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs. And our social media links are there, of course. And as always, we thank you for listening. We truly do appreciate it. And I promise this week, I'm going to check that Compluse audio, see if it came out or not. I know Matt, I can feel like Matt just wants to ask about it. So we'll see if that came out. But until then, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Again, thanks for listening. Until next time, remember, as always, just go there and do it.
Just go there and do it.